Midway across the Hudson River was a perfectly circular hit. UFO over New York,
and I am too surprised. Well, the thing that hovered sort of 100 yards away. I could have hit it with a brick if I saw.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that the days like this.
Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead. Doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Harold Bruce Knapp.
Yes, indeed. These are strange days indeed. And this program reflects the UFO side of the strangeness. Welcome to program number 385 in the current series. If you've just joined us for the first time, welcome. I know there are people listening around the planet in their thousands, and to them, particularly a very warm welcome. And if you just joined us for the first time, where have you been for the last 8 years that we have been doing this? It's good your curiosity was finally piqued, and here you are. And the way we welcome new people here is you put your hand on the radio and pledge to keep your eyes to the skies. You remember those days in radio, Victor Vigiani?
I certainly do. Good evening, Errol Bruce Knapp.
How the heck are you?
Eyes just fine.
Yeah. Confused a lot of people last week. We had to do a reprise of the Robert Salas program. Unfortunately, my dad isn't well, and I scuttled off to Peterborough to be there just in case, but fortunately, he's still with us.
That's
a little feek and weeble over the third bout in pneumonia.
But he's still present.
Yes, he is, more or less. I mean, he sort of drifts in and out, you know. And that's what happens to you when you get really old and things start to shut down. Mm-hmm. It's really sad to see.
Yeah, it is. I went through it with my mom several years ago, and it is. It's not a great thing to have to go through, but something that
we all have to go through eventually.
Yeah,
whether ourselves or members of our family. Mm-hmm. An interesting program tonight. A lot of people have asked when Wendy Connors would be back on, and lo and behold, tonight Wendy will join us at the bottom of this hour, and playing some clips from her latest Night Journeys in Ufology from the Faded Discs collection.
You know, she always manages to touch people with these clips. I talk to people and they always say, where did she get these things from? And the number of, the reality of these things.
When you hear the voices.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to read the books, but when you hear the accounts by these witnesses, when they called the first iteration of the National UFO Reporting Center, which was run by Robert Gribble back in those days, and you hear those voices, whether they be civilians or pilots or policemen or Air Force people. Quite fascinating stuff, and we have five excellent clips for you to hear tonight.
And the libraries she is developing with that is going to be an archive for history.
No doubt
about that.
And these discs suggest donation of $25 for the work, but it's MP3 files. Mm-hmm. So consequently, on this disc, there are 5 hours and 7 minutes and 48 seconds worth of audio files. Mm-hmm. And if you go to her website, fadeddiscs.com, you will see that she's been consolidating some of the earlier releases,
right,
so that you're getting sort of 30 and 40 hours of stuff on one CD. Amazing. Lemberg, who's on this program a little later on tonight, will take us home at around 10:30, says he puts it on when he gets up in the morning and sits at his computer with his coffee and just lets them roll while he's working.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite a collection that she's put out already, and they're all still available online at fadeddiscs.com.
Yeah, and if you want to get the real thing, it's worthwhile picking up one or two of the discs and just getting a taste of it, and then you get hooked. You get hooked.
Yes, you do. Interesting, the National Research Council in Ottawa has put up on its website the UFO reports that it has.
That's right. It's coming out with information about, I guess, the activities of four or five different ministries. Specifically, I guess, the Ministry of Transport and the Ministry of Defense, along with some other subsidiary ministries, and how they're taking on the reports and how they got funneled to the National Research Council. And I haven't had a lot of time to go through it thoroughly, but I'll tell you, there's some very good memos that that are typed out. They're all there for you to see. And if you want to visit the National Research Council, just type in National Research Council slash UFOs or whatever, and it'll all come up for you. And it's some very, very interesting, particularly around 1966, 67, when Pearson was directing cabinet ministers to review and give him UFO reports, which I find very interesting.
And we'll put a link to that up. I neglected to do that today, and it was one of the things that I wanted to do, but, you know, I also forgot my thumb drive to take the show home as an MP3 tonight. So it's just been one of those kinds of days, you know. And in talking of Canadian UFO reports on the Night Journeys and Ufology of Wendy's, there's a 16-minute clip of a report there from Kenora, Ontario, from back in 1989, a report of an object that hovered over a home and affected the lights and appliances in the home. 16 minutes worth of that person's report on Night Journeys in Ufology.
And people tend to think that the United States is the homeland of UFO sightings and all the recordings, but if you take a look at some of the stuff that's on the web and some of the material, it's Canadian.
Very much so, yes.
There's a lot of really...
Well, that wonderful stuff that we played from Michel Deschamps' recordings of the man up in Sudbury, Don Campbell.
Don Campbell, right.
And his description of seeing those UFOs over the hydro lines and sucking up the power and all the lights in Sudbury going out.
Astounding information, first-hand witness information about seeing a UFO and the effects of on the wires and the electricity and everything. So there is some really, really good Canadian stuff out there that I would encourage our listeners to pick up on if you're interested in that kind of thing.
And CBC Radio in its archives has, if you go to cbc.ca and type in UFO as the search, they have archived programs there with all kinds of stuff about UFOs. So there's all kinds of UFO history available as audio going back many, 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 many years. Dave Frelott's new book is out, published by Publish America, and it's available at Amazon.com. Contract for Deceit is the title of the book. If you go to tonight's program listing at virtuallystrange.net and click Strange Days Indeed, there's a link there that'll take you right to the Amazon.com page.
Here with his take on it is Dave Frelott.
There's a thread on the UFO updates list that has been going on for some time now, and it really needs to come to an end. Because those that believe the Santilli alien autopsy film is genuine are not going to change their opinion just because those that deny the film's authenticity present some facts. The thread is called Santilli and the Cameraman. And I'm going to basically just highlight a little bit about what's come out because some of it's interesting. You see, the prevailing question is, how did the cameraman come to have the film in his possession? Well, the first story was he took the film back to base, developed it, processed it, and then made a copy of it that he hid under his bed. So the cameraman, of course, just happened to have 1,200 feet to 1,500 feet of copy film in his pocket so he could accomplish this task, right? Well, wait a second. That means he actually would have had to requisition the film. And they might want to know what he needed it for and probably kind of would expect to see him hand it back in. Okay, well, if that doesn't quite work. So, the second idea would be the cameraman took the film back to base. He developed and processed it because there was some bad footage. And he kept those reels in his possession to process later. And then, of course, he processed those, and he put those reels under his bed to give to Ray Santilli. But, small problem here. Kodak says the few leader frames that they received were copy film. Okay, wait a second. Maybe that's not it. That takes us back to one. Okay, it was copy film. Okay, Jackie, well, you're such a good guy. Well, here's some copy film for you, bud, to make your very own copy of this autopsy. So, in other words, the question, of course, now is, how did he actually manage to keep the film in his possession? Okay, he made a copy of it, and he kept it under his bed, and he was hiding it there until somebody came along asking for some Elvis footage. And that, of course, was the secret password that alerted him that this person would be interested in purchasing this film that he'd kept under his bed all these years. And the military, of course, kept such poor records back in those days. Anybody could just go in and pick up a few rolls of film and not have to sign anything. Kodak loved it. They were just shipping film to the military by the truckload because anybody that wanted some were just picking it up as they ran along. Okay, so maybe we really can't say that the U.S. military were a bunch of buffoons that didn't know how to keep track of what they received and used. Okay, hold on. Here's the answer. The cameraman tried to turn all the film in, but because the military was changing, you know, with the formation of the CIA, the separation of the Air Force from the Army, the cameraman got confused. He didn't know who to give the film to. He tried to hand it in, but nobody wanted it. Ah, that's not my job to take that. And the cameraman must have been the only guy in the entire U.S. military that did not have a commanding officer that he reported to back in 1947. But, well, I guess they must have finally found another officer for the cameraman to report to because he was given orders to go and shoot another autopsy in 1949. But once again, the cameraman, he kind of got confused, and he tried to hand the film in, but nobody wanted it. The Air Force said give it to the Army said give it to the Air Force, etc. Well, I guess his CO must have been equally confused and couldn't remember who it was that issued the order to actually shoot the autopsy. Well, you see any kind of a pattern here? It's called Let's Change the Story to Fit the Facts. Well, the film is original footage that needed special processing. Well, the fact is, Kodak says the stuff they received was copy film. Okay? So the film is a copy that the cameraman made because he wanted a souvenir. Fact. The United States military issues you 20 rolls of film. You give back 20 rolls of film. Now, the cameraman couldn't hand in all the rolls of film because the military was going through changes. Fact. The U.S. military goes through changes daily. There is a chain of command, and you always have somebody that you report to, even if you are a top-ranking general and it's the President of the United States. It's unfortunate, but it appears that the ever-changing story of the cameraman keeps running into a little conflict with that teeny tiny thing called fact. No matter how you cut it, the facts of the alien autopsy film remain as this. There is film shot of what is purported to be an alien autopsy. No question. Somebody shot it, and it exists, but there is no reasonable explanation given by the person who says that they shot the footage, and that's just my take on it.
And a good one too, Dave.
Thank you, sir.
You know, I'm so tired and bored of the alien autopsy film footage and the endless discussion, you know. And it's you know, there are one or two people on the UFO updates list who keep on bringing it back up again, you know.
Well,
and about a year and a half ago, I stepped in and said, okay, that's enough alien autopsy until we get some new evidence. And the sneaky devils have just snuck it back in again in the last couple of weeks. It's...
Well, we kind of moved from the film over to the cameraman.
Yeah, and whether he paid his taxes or whether...
Yeah, that's the other good one.
Yeah.
But the trick is, bottom line is, as I said, he keeps running into facts. And the facts are there, and they can't be changed. You know, so it's like, ooh, okay, let's that doesn't work. I'll move over here. Oh, that doesn't work, so I'll move back here.
Yeah.
He can't find a story that actually works.
So all of that started just around the time that I started UFO Updates. I mean, it goes back all those years.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And here we are still talking about it, and there's nothing worth talking about.
No, no. Bottom line, it's fake.
Yes.
Okay.
And here we are still talking about it. Despite the fact that there's nothing
fake,
to talk about.
It's a cute fake. It's been on television. That's what they
Well, yeah. Those of you who missed it, I don't know how, because Fox ran the hell out of that alien autopsy documentary. And how you could have missed it, I don't know. And perhaps you're hearing about it for the first time. And just be grateful you haven't heard about it before.
And if you do, if it does come up, run. Do not walk. Run away from
it. Yeah. That's an email here from Bubba about you. Facts. Who cares about facts? Facts are biased. We here in the United States prefer opinions to facts. Let's hear it for truthiness.
I love it.
So, the new book is out.
Yes, sir.
Yes, Contract for Deceit, linkable via tonight's program listing.
Yeah, and it's not just Amazon, by the way. It's also Barnes & Noble.
Oh, Barnes & Noble. It's out there on the web and soon to be in your local bookstore, especially if you order it. They'll be very happy to sell it to you.
Yeah. You walk into Kohl's, or Kohl's or Indigo or whatever, and you just say, hey, I want that. And they go,
Contract
for
Deceit by David D. Furlott. Yes. Dave Furlott will join us again next week. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And have a good week.
You too.
And I'm looking forward to reading your book.
I'm looking forward to hear what you have to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, Dave, good night.
Good night.
I had said earlier on that Wendy Connor's new disc is Night Journeys and Ufology. That, of course, is the name of the new series. And the first disc in that is Hotline Reports, Robert Gribble's National UFO Reporting Center. Wendy Connors has been collecting UFO-related audio for more than a year or three, and has put together the most astounding sets of CDs which have MP3 files on them, and consequently all of these CDs have a staggering amount of audio on them. Joining us on the line tonight, and happy to have her back, is Wendy Connors of Faded Discs. Good evening, Wendy.
Hello, Errol. Oh. Victor.
Hello, Wendy. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, guys.
Atta girl.
How
are you
both doing?
We're doing.
Talking. I was talking to Don Ledger earlier this week, and he and his wife came down and visited with you, all too briefly, it would seem.
Oh yes. They. It was a pleasure. Oh, they're wonderful. they came down and spent a whole day with me.
Uh huh.
And oh, we had a great time. Downed a few suds and a little BO.
Well, any UFO researcher, archivist worth their salt would definitely down a few suds.
Oh, absolutely.
With visiting fellow researchers or audio archivists. Yeah, and Don, of course, was down at Lachlan at the UFO conference there, which happened, 2 weeks ago now? 2 weekends ago?
Yeah, I think so.
And I had a swell old time. He said.
Oh, Aztec is going on right now.
Aztec is this weekend, isn't it? Are you going to show up there, or are you not going to bother this year?
No, I decided to just hang back and be on the show.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's very nice. Yeah.
I thought I'd bring you truthiness tonight, American style.
Truthiness, yeah. That Bubba boy, he's some kind of patriot, I'm telling you now. I'm telling you right away.
Yeah.
So what you going to...
Guns in the back of the truck from the window.
Yeah, and I'm not going to repeat the bumper sticker that I recall seeing when I lived down in Arizona for a while. But, yeah. So what do you got for us tonight, Wendy Connors?
Oh, hey, what I'm doing is actually trying to go through the part of ufology that's pretty much hidden from everybody. And it's kind of shaken me up because after so many decades of research, now I know I've got many more decades of research to listen to the hidden ufology.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I'd share some with you tonight because there's really a lot of unanswered questions in ufology, and they're important questions. And, well, you know, I hope I can bring some to you tonight, such as, like, what do you do with a UFO that wants to walk and then has to bounce a few times to get off the ground before it can finally fly away? Or what does a spy ship captain say when his ship is on a collision course with three UFOs and he's surrounded by Russian ships and they're all spooking along a few miles off the coast of Cuba?
Very good questions.
Yeah.
And then what does it mean when a UFO lands, starts slicing and dicing, and then leaves white grass behind? What's that all about?
Oh, they're into chlorophyll as well as bull's blood, huh?
Yeah. White grass.
Bizarre.
I don't know whether to smoke it or graze on it.
The first thing that comes to Wendy's mind.
Smoke it or graze on it? Is that what you? Oh my goodness.
And then finally, you know, as a woman, I'm really kind of torqued, especially at Phil class, because Phil always likes to talk about pilots of airplanes who see UFOs, and he never gave the women pilots a break. So I thought I would kind of bring a UFO story from a woman pilot.
Nice.
Yeah.
Mm.
So there's a lot of good stuff.
Okay. So where do you want to start?
Well, I guess right from the beginning, let's start with the first one. Now, just suppose now that UFOs interfered with seven satellite communication bases around the world at the same time. Let's take a listen.
1964-65 at RAF Chick Sands in Bedfordshire, England. I was a military dependent. The base is a satellite communications base. It was in the afternoon, in the daylight. A friend of mine and I were playing badminton in the backyard on the base. We were shouting and laughing and carrying on, and then we realized that we couldn't hear each other. There wasn't any sound at all. And we stopped and tried to talk to each other again and still couldn't hear each other and looked around, and right above us at the top of the trees was a large dark object. We couldn't really tell anything from it because we could only see the bottom. And we got scared. We were just 14, 15 years old. She went inside the house to get her dad. And inside the house, he could hear her. And he came out to look at it, and we couldn't hear him talking to us either, and he couldn't hear us when he was outside. So he went back inside, alerted the post. When he went back inside, it started moving off above the treetops, and as soon as it wasn't right above us, we could hear again. And I heard the siren. Post went on alert. He came back out and watched it go off over the trees, and it was moving very slowly. And it moved over maybe three or four houses away, and they were housing units, so it was still fairly close. They were calling the alert, and he told me to go home. So I ran home, and my father, who was senior NCO on the base, was just leaving. All the people on alert went down in what we called the hole. All the satellite communication stuff was underground. And they went down in the hole, and the base was closed. He didn't come back until in the morning. I asked him what it was, and he said, I can't tell you. He said, all I can say is that it wasn't ours. Some years later, when we were talking about it in the family, I asked him again, and he said, it wasn't ours. And I said, well, I know that. And he said, well, there are seven bases like the one we were on in the world. And he said there were sightings at all seven that same day.
Sightings at all seven that same day. Satellite, some sort of satellite communications centers, as they were then with the armed forces, the American armed forces.
I think this kind of proves the point that perhaps ufology is important, even having national security issues involved with it.
It certainly is. But then, you know, UFOs are not a threat to national security. That's what the National Research Council here in Canada says. They have a lot of the reports that were the National Research Council has gathered over the years are now online up here in Canada. And the mantra is there, too. You know, UFOs, if they exist, they're not a threat to national security. try telling the guys in the missile silos at Malmstrom.
There you go.
Where that whole flight of intercontinental ballistic missiles were shut down by UFOs. And they're not a threat to America's national security.
I guess. The stuff I listen to sure makes it.
Oh, yeah.
On the back of my neck.
Well, yes, and any sane, rational thinking human being would feel the same way. But apparently, the American Air Force is not rational and is not sane and not thinking. Well, especially not with their explanations of Roswell. Let's continue to talk to Wendy Connors of FadedDiscs.com, playing clips tonight from her new series. The first disc, Night Journeys in Ufology, is the series Hotline Reports, Robert Gribble's National UFO Reporting Center out of Seattle, Washington. Robert Gribble handed over to Peter Davenport in 1900 and... So that's 1984? 94.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's right around the time I got started in all of this.
That last clip, Wendy, what year. I didn't pick out what year it was.
It's just from the 1960, she said 64 or 65. She couldn't really remember.
I see. So it's in the 60s. Okay.
Right, in the 60s.
So from the same CD full of MP3s, Wendy Connors.
Oh, yeah.
Clip number.
We should, I guess, make it plain that all of the clips tonight are short little clips from the full recordings that are on the disc.
Yeah, almost 6 hours of recordings on that disc, too.
Are we ready for another one?
Oh, okay, if we have to.
Oh, if we have to, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, everybody sit back, because we're going to go back to 1973. We're going to be off the coast of Cuba. Everybody got that in their mind? Okay, here's the scenario. A U.S. Navy spy ship is playing patty cake with Russian contemporaries while Castro, well, whatever Castro does when he isn't doing 1.5 triple gainers and burning his underwear. But anyway.
Or talking for 17 hours in a row.
Well, anyway, three UFOs are painted on the ship's radar. Now, the captain, apparently schooled in the Donald Rumsfeld tradition, is called to the bridge. Let's take a listen.
I was on a spy ship, and we were south of San Fuegos, Cuba, 14 miles off the coast. And on the radar, this cigar-shaped blip appeared coming out from San Fuegos Harbor. And then another one and another one. There ended up being three of them. And we were on a collision course with these things. However, it was a full moon night. We couldn't see anything on the water. We couldn't see anything with the night observation devices. There was nothing on the water with our air radar. We couldn't see anything. I even had the sonar directed in that area, and we couldn't detect any noise coming from that area, and yet we had these flips on the screen. We remained on a collision course. We called general quarters, and everyone became prepared. The captain came to the bridge, and nothing happened. These things just passed over us, through us, under us, whatever. They just went right through the center of the screen and just right on out past us. I also had the radar checked out. Everything was good on all radars. Now, in that area, the Russians were having a, it was a top secret thing at that time. It probably still is. And there were several Russian ships, very advanced ships in the area, along with the best of what Cuba had in that San Fuegos Harbor. And I thought it was interesting. As far as I know, no report was ever made of it because the captain didn't want to seem like a fool. But the whole ship was aware of this. I had never really thought anything about these things until that happened, and I just thought that was very, very strange.
It Well, I guess. Very, very strange. It disappeared over the ship, under the ship, or through the ship.
Just passed right through
Just
us.
Passed right through them.
How? You know, a little factoid, mm-hmm. listening to the wonderful research that Robert Gribble did,
mm-hmm.
I find little trends going on. For example, the very earliest flying triangles start being reported. A whole 6 month worth of people seeing translucent UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this translucent effect just all of a sudden starts really showing up in mass day after day, month after month. It's really incredibly good data.
It's really interesting because none of these people, you know, obviously know one another. They just heard about the National UFO Reporting Center and said, oh, I'm going to call and report. And, you know, years later, Wendy Connors starts to see trends and sees the first flying triangles reports coming in and the translucents. And did you find that a lot of reports came from compact areas or were they spread out all over the place?
Oh, they're just from everywhere.
Hmm.
I mean, there were little mini flaps
mm-hmm.
During the years, of course, and that were concentrated in small communities or through a state or a kind of a two or three tri-state area.
Mm.
But no, the calls came from all over.
Yeah. Let's let you know that Wendy Connors is our guest. We have three clips to play. We also have a call from Maddie here in Tirana. So let's say evening, Maddie.
Good evening. How are you today?
Whoa, loud. Whoa. My head. My cans just took off from there, from the side of my head.
Good to have you with us.
Yes,
it
is.
It's a pleasure, as always, to be here.
Yeah, well, so what's up, Maddie? You got a question?
I have a question, and I'll try to be quick, because I do have something that leads up to this question. My partner and I live in Toronto, and we were living up on the north end of the city. One night, there was this ruckus outside, this really bizarre sound up above the house. My partner said that she saw these really strange flashing lights, and then we heard this chatter. It almost sounded like an animal, but it's something we'd never heard before.
Mm.
And it was really bizarre. And I was wondering, Ms. Connors, do you have sounds of UFOs on your website, or do you know where you can get them?
Well, the only sounds that I have were some of the sounds that were submitted to the Condon Committee back in the 1960s, and some of those were like from Billy Meyer and people like that. And there's been some beeping sounds, like there's a famous case in Canada where there was a beeping sound and they couldn't figure out what was going on.
Yeah, that was Lindy Tucker, and we've had Lindy on the program and played some of those beeping sounds. Some people say it's a saw-whit owl, but having listened...
This sound that we heard was a lot like it sounded almost like a police siren, sort of, but it was very, very fast, and it was above the house. It was bizarre.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah, there is a case that I listened to, just a couple of weeks ago. It was kind of unique. A farmer reported a UFO, but he couldn't see it, but there's these sounds right above his barn, and it was kind of a crackling sound, like cellophane.
Yeah, almost like static, huh?
Yeah, and then he would see these little tiny flashes of light, but he didn't see any object.
Mm.
Just these little flashes of light and this crinkly sound.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that made this interesting was that there was all this running around in the backyard, and all this chatter. It got everybody, you know, there was a couple of them underneath us, and even they were going, what's all the ruckus? What's going on out there?
Mm-hmm.
It was bizarre.
Yeah. Does
chatter sound like a form of communication? Or?
Pardon?
Did this chattering sound like people talking?
No, it was almost like, it was a combination. It sounded sort of like an animal, but something... else. It's hard to describe it. You would have had to heard it to actually know what it was. It was strange, and both of us were really creeped out by it. Like, I felt like The strange thing was with this experience, and I'm not sure if it was just me because this is just something that I don't know what it is, or if it was something that was actually happening, but I felt like somebody was trying to invade my thoughts. Yeah, it was really, really odd.
There's six or seven cases that I've listened to. Pretty much witnesses saying the same thing, that they thought that, you know, somebody was going to try to control them or something, and it really scared them.
Well, they couldn't control me, and the thing that was interesting about it was the more they tried, the angrier they got. Because they could, and then finally, it just stopped.
Maddie, we need to move on. I want to.
Yes, sir. I won't stay on the phone. I just wanted to see if you knew of anything. But thank you very much for entertaining my conversation. I appreciate it from all of you.
Okay.
Okay.
Good night, Maddie.
Bye now.
Bye now. I'm not sure, but I think the Lindy Tucker show is program is in the archives. I think beeping UFOs, I believe, was the topic of the night. So Wendy Connors, what else? I'm waiting to hear the next one. You know,
okay.
I mean, you have such good stuff on these discs, you know.
well, this is the real ufology. This is the ufology that even seasoned researchers have not really had the opportunity to engage in.
Mm-hmm.
So. These things are for everybody. If you really want to know real meat and taters, raw ufology, this is it. Now, this next clip is a rarity because it's from the early 1980s, and it's the only woman pilot who reported a UFO that I've ever heard of. And I was really excited until the air traffic controller described what the object looked like, and then my heart sank. So let's take a listen.
I'm the supervisor, Baltimore Approach Control. We had an aircraft that sighted a UFO, the Piper Cherokee, operating on an IFR flight plan going from Baltimore, Maryland, to Islip, Long Island, New York. The aircraft was level at 5,000 feet in the vicinity of Rock Hall, Maryland. The pilot reported an object passed approximately 1/8 of a mile in front of the aircraft, appeared to be westbound. It was described as being box-shaped, approximately the size of a washing machine box, and it had antenna. Another aircraft in the vicinity, which is November 2, which is an FAA aircraft, a Citation jet, was in that area doing air work at 7,500 feet. He agreed to take a vector to the vicinity of this other aircraft, and he stated, "I see something," but he did not describe it. He suggested that we check with the people in a restricted area firing range up at Aberdeen to see if they hadn't launched something. I did, and they did not. So we check with our local weather bureau. They have no knowledge of any radio sign or weather balloons being released at the time.
Yeah, air traffic control, you see. I mean, it's not just civilians and people who live in the Appalachians. Or
oh,
in,
no. Oh, no.
Or in Missouri. No. Yeah. So what you got next for us?
Well, I thought this next one, I don't know whether I needed to call a ufologist or a lawn specialist. So I thought we would go back to the 1980s again and travel to Edgemont, Massachusetts, and let the investigating police officer explain what he found.
This is the Edgemont Police Department, Edgemont, Massachusetts. She was awakened by a bright light and a loud noise outside her house. She had like a cut or something on her chest area. And she put on her shoes, and her shoes were wet. She didn't remember leaving the house for the night. For some reason, she walked up into the area where she seen the light. And she seen a triangular, I don't know what you'd call it. I just went up and looked at it with another policeman. Sir, I describe it as a area in the grass with three triangular spots on the grass. It would be the grass is down in those three spots, and the grass is discolored to a white color. We measured the spots. They're all approximately 16 inches in diameter, and from center to center measured, it is exactly 10 feet 4 inches. She reports that last night, she did see in the sky a flat-shaped object with all different colorations of lights on it. We took pictures of the indentations in the grass, the discolorations in the grass, and also did the measuring, of course, and I'll file a report here.
Hmm.
Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah, physical trace evidence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ground trace evidence. Yes. And interesting that a policeman would call a UFO reporting line, huh?
Well, I think if I remember rightly, I think he also saw it.
He did?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did.
Mm.
I may be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to so many hundreds of recordings to keep them all straight.
Yes. Well,
but boy, what an education.
If the listeners want to hear for themselves, then they should just go online and order a copy of the first in the series, Night Journeys in Ufology, Hotline Reports, Robert Gribble's National UFO Reporting Center out of Seattle, Washington. And Robert Gribble faithfully recorded all the calls that came in. But he didn't collate his handwritten reports often with what he'd recorded. So that must have been a little chaotic for you, eh, Wendy?
Trying to just a little bit.
Yeah, trying to piece all of this together.
But for the vast, vast majority of the time, he did keep meticulous notes.
Mm-hmm.
And that, but these little hotline cases and that, it's just like all of us. We get busy or get interrupted or something, and you mean to do something and go back to it, and you never get it done.
They try to find something on your computer sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know I got it, but where is it? What did I call it?
Wendy, you listen to literally hundreds and hundreds of hours of these things. I don't know how much time you actually sit down and say, okay, I'm going to sit down and listen for, what, 4 or 5 hours at one given time, or what do you do?
Well, I get up every morning, have a little breakfast. And then I start working, and I work until 5 o'clock, and then I stop and have dinner. And my housemate and I usually have dinner, watch a movie, and then I go back to work until about midnight. And then I get up in the morning, and I start all over again, and I do this 7 days a week.
Goodness gracious. In all of that listening time, what kinds of things stand out to you? What are the ones that really kind of perk your interest? I know you've got a lot there. Which ones really kind of hit you hard?
Well, like the ones I'm playing tonight, they're all different. And what I look for is something that is unique or it's historically important because it's the beginning of something, like, for example, the flying triangle starting to show up. And then I also look for the humanity of the people making their report.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are extremely funny, even though they're scared to death.
Mm.
And the vast majority of these recordings, I mean the vast majority of these recordings, are either they're reporting within minutes after the sighting, and many of the recordings, they're actually in the middle of the sighting as they're talking. So, you know, it's just a whole new outlook on ufology. When you get away from the written material, which is vastly important, and get to the human side of it, you start to pick up the nuances of the people talking, and then when you compare that to what's written, it's the whole big world of difference.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean when I say that this is a whole new structure of ufology. And thank goodness Robert Gribble did what he did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also made it is making it available for all of us.
Yeah. So thank you, Robert Gribble.
And the only things that I do is I edit out their names, addresses, and phone numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what you hear is what's there.
Yes. Do you want to
now,
set up,
somebody
Wendy, do you want to set up the last clip?
Sure. Oh, the very last one?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is clip 5.
Oh, okay. Well, we're going to go to... I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. We're going to go to Seville, Ohio, to the Lady of Seville. That's how she introduced herself in the beginning. And this is from the 1980s. It's a very unique case. A woman observes what appears to be a newly hatched UFO that learns to walk and then learns to fly. Now, I don't know if the mommy UFO had been watching from afar, but maybe you can tell.
I live on a farm. I don't know what it could have been. It was some real bright gold object that was in the field across the street from me. It lingered over there a little while, and then it came over just like it walked across over into my field. Suddenly made a turn and went back just the very same path it took when it came over and went back to where it was. It was a real bright gold color, 3 to 4 feet in diameter. It just looked like it was walking, as if there were an animal in it or something. I couldn't believe the balloon would do that. There was no wind or anything. Went to the very same spot it was before, and it lingered back over there for a little while. It went back and forth a little bit. You could almost hear it wasn't a motor, but it was like leaves or something. It made 3 attempts to go up. It went up 2 feet, then about 4 feet, and the third time, it went up to about 8 feet, and then it took off. Was anybody doing remote control around or something? Or it was just as if it were walking. I didn't think much about it because I kept thinking it was a balloon. And then when I saw it taking off to go back to where it was originally, like, it was just like it was hopping. And it was sort of, it was more or less like an octagon shape. It was the strangest thing I ever heard of.
Oh, my.
Now, I challenge anybody to tell me that this woman is lying or deluded.
Yeah, yeah.
You ought to hear the one about the goat farmers. That's a really good case.
Oh, sure. Tell us about it now.
Well, it's too long to go into it, but, well, I tell you, you cannot judge a witness by what they do for a living.
Wendy Connors of FadedDiscs.com, her latest from a new series that she's producing, Night Journeys in Ufology, Hotline Reports from Robert Gribble's National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington. Wendy, once again, thank you so much for what it is that you do, and thank you for being with us and playing just a teeny fraction of what it is that you've done.
Oh, you're very welcome, and I thank everyone for listening, and especially those who call in and ask questions.
Yeah,
that really gets me going.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it's like having those witnesses' voices on tape. You know, you hear in their voices what it is that they witnessed. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Okay,
love.
Thank you much. Bye, everybody.
Good night. Wendy Connors, FadedDiscs.com. Let's see. It's been a whole week since his voice was heard on this mini network that is Montreal and Toronto, and this huge network that spreads its tentacles around the world via the World Wide Web. I'm talking about Alfred Lemberg down there in Alabama. Good evening, Alfred.
Good evening, Errol.
Oh. We both sat back, pulled the headphones off our heads just a little bit, waiting for that whistle. And
I endeavor to always be a surprise.
Yes, and a surprise you certainly are. So did Wendy draw you in with her new clips?
Well, before we get to her, I've got to say good evening, Victor.
Ah,
good evening, Alfred. Good to hear your voice again.
Certain anonymities must be maintained at all times. Certain courtesies are required.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Wendy kills me, I think, so much because, like she said herself, or you kind of alluded to, Errol, that she shows the provenance of all of these things, and that she involves herself with witnesses who are sometimes, many times, just moments from the event that they're reporting. And some of the things that she was talking about this evening with regard to that military dependent whose father was the senior UFO on a high-speed, high-profile, if low-visibility, post, right?
Now,
that's significant.
Alfred, let me just take you back a few words. Let me take you... Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Let me take you back a few words. The senior UFO, you said, not senior NCO. You actually said senior UFO.
A pleasant slip.
Yes.
Well, I mean, they're on my mind. What can I tell you? But, you know, like, it's right here in my show notes, UFO.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm sticking by it.
Okay.
No.
But you are right.
Senior NCO on the base, that is significant.
Yes.
Yeah, you are right. The immediacy of those kinds of reports do tend to kind of grab you as opposed to sitting there reading an actual text of a report. It's fascinating to hear the urgency and the tension in the voices and what they're saying, listening to what they're saying and describing, and also listening to the quality of the voice.
Hello.
You're here.
Yeah. You have one of those phone lines it's the connecting cord between your handset and the phone itself that is being a problem right now. Oh, nice. And he hung up on us.
So there, is it something we said?
It must have been, huh? The senior UFO, perhaps. Do you want to try calling him again, Julian, just to make sure that we haven't upset him? I think he's just having problems with a flaky phone, and he knows that we shall call him back because we're those kinds of guys.
Well, we need to talk to him because I always enjoy listening to him because he has a perspective unlike anyone else.
I notice you plowing through his latest post to the UFO updates.
Fascinating. I'm translating as I go along.
That's what those notes are in the margin. You even printed it out. Was it 16 pages long?
The entire one was six. His is only about nine.
Nine pages.
About that, anyway. And the translation is really interesting.
Are you going to ask him about it?
I'd like to.
I've mentioned it.
I really would like to address the whole issue. I think what he's getting at in the posting on the UFO updates is almost the sort of what we were just talking about a few minutes ago, battle over worldviews, about how certain people who examine certain really important issues want to get at the truth, but they need to expose that, and then the ridicule that's mounted on them just dishevels everything that they say and what they say. So I'd like to get his perspective on it.
And are you paying attention here, Alfred Lemberg? Okay, we need to bring that fader up. There, you got about the last half of that?
Right.
Right. We were talking about your post to the updates list.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, just
what, my opus?
Yes. Victor printed it out. It's nine pages in about 8 point.
Yeah, it was about 2,500 words. That occurred to me while I was out there in the forest, and you just sit down and you start, okay, what's really bothering me about what's going on here? And that's what's so refreshing about Wendy Connors, actually, is that one begins to wonder what is her take on what's going on, you know. You mentioned it yourself, Errol. She's seeing trends by virtue of the fact that she immerses herself so completely in the milieu, you know, the genre, the reality. You know, it's, I mean, she's into it so much. She's,
yeah.
That she's got to have some really interesting takes on it, and I wish somebody, you know, smarter than me that could ask her the appropriate questions could bring some of those things out, you know.
Mm. Well, as you know, just by sheer dint of the amount of time that she puts in listening, and you've listened to practically everything that she's put out on an ongoing basis.
Actually, I have about maybe three quarters of what she's put out.
Mm-hmm.
And I've only listened to, really, you know, I mean, got into it intensively, listened to about half of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many of them that you want to go over and listen to again and again. One major point that I want to make about Wendy and this historical compilation that she's put together is that there is so much information there that for the price of a CD, you can become a UFO researcher in your own right.
Mm. Well,
you know, I pulled up something interesting. There was, you know, something was misattributed, and it's something that's a function of popular culture, but it's the Star Trek non-interference doctrine.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
And everybody thinks that Gene Roddenberry kind of had, you know, invented that. But,
Isaac Asimov.
No, he stole it fair and square.
Hmm. He stole it from Wilbert Brockhouse Smith.
Right, W.B. Smith. who had it, you know, years and years. And, you know, and when you get to hear W.B. Smith talking about this and other things that he was involved with, you know, you again find out the provenance of some of these things and where they came from. And Smith was, you know, pretty serious, I think, about he was getting his information from people that inhabited UFOs.
And Wilbur Brockhouse Smith, the former Department of Communications wireless or radio engineer, probably oversaw this station during his tenure at the Department of Communications, a Canadian. And it was the boys topside, as he called them, who gave him the thing that ended the law of non-intervention. No, it's not the law. It's the rule, the thing.
Yeah, the doctrine of non-interference.
Non-interference in primitive cultures.
Yeah, you know, where you didn't, you know, if you didn't have warp drive, you couldn't get on board, right?
Yeah.
And well, that always kind of tickled me because, you know, you think, gee, you know, you can't be part of the galactic community unless you're warped.
Alfred Lemberg down there in Alabama, regular contributor to this program. If you just joined us via CJAD 800 in Montreal, hey, you missed an amazing hour of audio clips from Wendy Connors. I keep telling you, CFRB.com, if you happen to be online. And there's other things happening in Montreal on the radio. You can always listen in via the web, the way tens of thousands of people apparently do. Alfred Lemberg is with us, but before we talk again to Alfred, let's go to the phones. This is John in Scarborough, outside Toronto. Good evening, John.
Sorry, my question is, how come it's always two people that report a UFO sighting?
How come it is that...
Always, like, if it's a UFO, how come, like, the whole town doesn't see it?
Well, because probably the whole town isn't out on the road at the time, because they're not looking up into the sky, because people aren't out there actually looking for these things, John. The great majority of people get taken completely unawares.
And many times the whole town sees it.
And many times the whole town sees it, as Alfred Lemberg says. And I don't know where you get this number of two people who report UFOs. It can be from one to literally hundreds of people who have had UFO sightings all in one swell foop.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, John, thank you for your call. Good night. Oh, my. It's amazing, you know. I don't know how it is that people latch on to facts the way John did, you know. Maybe he read it somewhere and it stuck in his mind.
I think it's also a function of the familiarity that you do or do not have with the whole phenomenon.
Well, that's
you
true,
know,
too.
If you're a first-time listener or if you're curious as to what we're talking about, that's a pretty logical question.
Yeah.
If you've been around the block a couple of times, we all kind of know how to respond to that kind of concern.
So. Well, that was a good gentle up of my response. Thank you. Alfred Lemberg.
Sir.
Yes, you are indeed still on the radio.
Interesting call. These folks bless them, well-meaning, you know, they think they get information and they, you know, they want to challenge with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact is they're getting their information in many cases from a pretty diseased and non-functional and fraudulent mainstream that is giving them bad information.
Mm-hmm. If they're giving them any information at all.
Well, several people have pointed out, Stanton Friedman among them, that the best thing is not to admit any facts and don't tell people what they don't already know.
Mm-hmm. I want to go to Marial. Joining us on the line is Andre. Andre, good evening.
Good evening. I'd like to ask you guys one simple question.
Yes, sir.
Why do we need disclosure?
Why do we need disclosure?
You know that ET presence is here.
Yes.
I guess it depends on who you mean by we.
Yes. A lot of us know that they're here. We've had experiences that indicate that they are indeed here. I guess what we need is closure for what it is that we have experienced. And we want an acknowledgement by the people that represent us. that people that we have voted into power, for the most part, we want an acknowledgement from them that, yes, indeed, there are things going on around us that haven't been
addressed.
Well,
from my point of view, the ET presence deals with higher consciousness, and it's not in the government's job to promote higher consciousness.
Well, that, yeah. You,
well, that's like a little of it, Brabham.
No, I know where you're going with that argument, Andre, and it's a very good argument, too. We don't need the government to admit necessarily that what's going on. We don't really need them to. But I think in the global perspective that we have, the amount of control that governments and multinational corporations have over the planet itself, there are so many things that are being held back in terms of financial and medical and technological advances that we could make if government would only listen and pay attention to the fact that we could be part of a greater galactic civilization. And if they're not going to allow the citizens of the planet to engage in that kind of civilization, then we're all losers in it. So I think that's why we need disclosure.
Well, from my personal point of view, we're not going to get it because like I said before, I called before, and I said this in a funny way, we're all victims of a higher institution of mislearning. It goes against our institution.
Yes. I remember you now, Andre.
Sorry about that.
No.
It's okay. Hey, I just wrote 2,500 words on that.
You got that one, yeah. Yes.
So how's the Foghorn Rebel?
Andre, we have to go. Thank you for your call.
Okay, take care. And,
bon nuit.
Bonnery,
good night.
I'm a little foghorn for him.
Nice, very nice. We have about, what, a minute and a half left to go, something like that. And time just screams by in the two-hour format. And anything you want to add, Alfred Lindbergh?
Well, I'm glad that my paper made a little bit of the minimal impact on Victor there, and he printed it out. And, you know, like, there's a lot going on in there with regard to thinking on the state of the philosophy that is ufology, I think. And I, you know, like, I'm pretty proud of the comments that I made.
And so you should be. And if listeners want to go to the UFO Updates archive, which is at virtuallystrange.net, and I posted it today, in March 25th, 2006. And well into my majority is the subject line. Go read that. It's a fascinating read. It gives you insight into the man, Alfred Lindbergh, and the dilemma that a lot of people are facing.
And real briefly, if the folks will get a link to the last entry on my blog, the Alien Views group blog, I think that they'll be pleased because there's an illustration there. There's hypertext and a dictionary.
Yes, we definitely needed
a few words, you know.
Yes.
That
and some interesting punctuation.
And now for the translation.
We're out of time, Alfred. Thank you, sir.
Hasta la vista, mein Herr.
We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, Victor Vigiani. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Good night, Alfred. Thank you, Julian McNabb. Thank you, Jim Pacheco, albeit for the brief. 22 or 23 minutes. We'll talk to you next week. Good night.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is Gene Mascardell.